it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Brett Rutherford, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Darby Robinson. We are live on YouTube on the Raise Your Voice YouTube channel and on X from the D-Raise Bay account. Make sure, if you're watching on YouTube, to like, subscribe, and turn on those notifications so you can join in on the fun every single time we go live. And if you're listening to this in podcast form, just letting you know that leaving a five-star rating and review goes a long way in supporting us. If you really enjoy what we do and want to say thank you, head on over to patreon.com/raiseyourvoice, where you can become a member for as little as $1 a month. Darby, we have real baseball to talk about on this episode after the Rays took on the Blue Jays this weekend, and they are playing the Rangers right now. It's not going so great, but maybe you're watching that on the TV, following along or listening along with Raise Your Voice live on X or on YouTube. Even though they're down 3-0, maybe Raise Your Voice for live recording brings some better luck to the Rays. But Darby, how are you feeling after this weekend's slate of games?
Well, I think they did what, when you start the season, right, you just want to see the team not like kind of fall so flat to start the year. These games, I think Tom Tango had a tweet today that like basically was like the games, the first four games do not matter any more than games 35 through 39. However, they do feel a lot different. And they do feel a lot different, right? Because this is the first time you've gotten a chance to see it. So you go 0 for 4 and have like four blown leads in the bullpen, like the Houston Astros did against the Yankees. You're feeling really bad, right? You're like kind of in a spiral. That can happen, but like it really sucks to have that start the season. For the Rays, splitting 2-2 against a very good Blue Jays team, that's what you got to do. They came out. There's a lot to like. There were some things to not like. Overall, though, the Rays are back. The branding's fun. The team has some really interesting elements to it that we'll talk about today. And they did exactly what they needed to do in that first home, series. Split series against good teams. Go 750 against bad teams. That gets you into the postseason. That gets you a fighting chance for that division title. So 500, 2-2 against the Jays. I'll take that.
When we last spoke, I know you said if it's a series split and they play badly, you would feel a lot different about it. And although I think there was some instances of bad baseball scattered throughout the weekend, I don't think you can say overall that the team played badly in game one. You had really one bad inning from your starter, and then the bats kind of went cold after that. Game four was not a great pitching game by any means, but I don't think over the course of the weekend you're coming out of that thinking, man, they just didn't play well.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, I think looking at them, it's interesting, right? So you have two pretty darn fun games and two kind of frustrating games. That game one, I mean, Eflin looked about as good as we've ever seen him until he didn't, right? And so he kind of got his mechanics got all over the place. He talked about that I think it was the sixth inning there. And it's a new strategy for the Rays this year is to try to extend their pitchers a little bit more, have them ready to go deeper and not kind of maybe churn through that bullpen as much as they did and churn through different arms from last year. So it's a different strategy. And that's going to happen sometimes. I think the Rays are aware, clearly, Kevin Cash is aware of leaving starters in too long and the dangers that can pose. This is on purpose, though, because this is a long marathon, right? You're going to accept that sometimes your starter, just like when a reliever comes in and they're not hot, sometimes a starter who's been cruising will suddenly hit a wall and suddenly will just stop be cruising all of a sudden. And that's what happened to Eflin. But overall, I think you look at the weekend, I'd say you played really good baseball. The one thing is the offense played really well. You have two games where they didn't score a lot of runs, but the process and the at-bats were very good. Throughout the entire series, every single game, the Rays had, as in expected stats at least, the same expected batting average as the Blue Jays or better in every single game. So they did not get out-hit. You know, hard-hit balls, like they were equal to the Jays in each game, right? They were both teams hit the ball well. The Rays were hitting the ball well. They did not have a ton of luck on some batting balls in games 1 and 4, but the offense is definitely not an issue right now. And that's a good sign, right? You ended the season last year, shutout and kind of just pitiful offense, basically, against the Rangers. You did the same two years ago against Cleveland. You want to watch that taste out very quickly, right? After Cleveland, they go on a 13-0 winning streak, one of the best offenses in baseball. Boom, that washes that out. This series against the Jays, they beat some pitchers that usually give them some hard times too, especially with like Yusei Kikuchi. And they hit well. They hit hard hit balls. They scored runs. And in the games they didn't score runs, they were still putting it together good at bats. Yeah, so I think overall, I think the things that didn't go well, and we'll talk about that, I think are concerns for sure, but I think they are less important concerns for me, at least.
Yeah. This Ray staff, for the first time in a long time, is really built on guys that rely on their command more than their stuff, and the Rays still have some amazing stuff, you know, throughout their pitching staff. But Zach Eflin, one of the best pitchers when it comes to command in all of baseball, and through those first five innings on Thursday, had incredible command. So he was doing really well. And when he lost that command, just like when a pitcher like Blake Snell or Tyler Glasnow, who relies on their stuff, right, their nasty curveballs and their high-octane fastballs, when one of those pitches isn't working, things start to fall apart. Eflin, you know, lost the command, started to lose the game. But overall, looking at that and watching that entire game back, and I'm not worried at all about Eflin and his command and his pitches. That they all seem to be working through those first five innings. It's just a matter of getting over that hump his next time out, which will be tomorrow or Tuesday, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, against the Rangers. So an even more difficult lineup. Toronto has a couple, you know, really strong hitters and some other decent hitters throughout. The Rangers, though, clearly coming off a World Series championship, one of the best lineups in baseball. You know, at the top of that list, Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Adolis Garcia. They've got a ton of great hitters. And so it's going to be even more difficult for Eflin tomorrow. But do you have any worry about Eflin and where he goes after this?
No, not really. I think, you know, when you are a command pitcher and you have a lot of breaking balls and that's your kind of claim to fame, you're sometimes going to leave a bad pitch here and there. And when your mechanics fall apart, it can get ugly pretty quickly, but I'm not worried about Eflin. I think we saw him bounce back from some bad starts last year. And I think for the most part, he's just a very reliable veteran pitcher who knows what he's doing. He also knows how to like prepare and flush bad starts, right? He's not going to dwell on it and he's going to go fresh. And yeah, I mean, Blue Jays and then Rangers back to back is a really tough way to start the season for pitchers. There's going to be easier targets for sure after this, but it's not going to be his first two. But I'm not worried at all. Not with Eflin. I think the big question marks, I think that's what actually helped in that first series, right? Is you had Eflin had of the starters, of like the more locked in starters, he had the worst overall game, but it really was more just one bad inning. He had a very good game and then one disastrously bad inning. And he's the one I'm least worried about. Yep. So that, like, he's one that I can just completely say, like, you know what? Bad inning. Okay. Doesn't matter. Move on to the next one. I gladly give him the ball in 5 days.
Friday and Saturday, we saw Aaron Civale and Zach Littell. Now, Aaron Civale put together one of his best starts as a Ray, if not his best. He I don't think he pitched that poorly last season, but the numbers didn't back it up. He, I think, was pretty unlucky down the stretch. But he pitched really well against Toronto. Zach Littell, man, I loved watching Zach Littell last year. I didn't love the idea of entering the season with Zach Littell, who is another reliever turned starter, as your number three. And we're like 2 years removed from when they did it with Drew Rasmussen. I was more confident in Drew Rasmussen. I still really like Zach Littell, but man, that start on Saturday did a lot to like boost my confidence in him, in being someone who can stay in this rotation, can hopefully make, you know, 28 to 30 starts and be really effective.
Yeah, he was sensational. I mean, I think I have a piece coming out on D-Ray's Bay soon about my ode to really just enjoying the aesthetics of watching Zach Littell starts.
Yeah.
Because he's very much like an old school pitcher, and I'm not an old school baseball guy that loves, you know, like 92 mile an hour sinker pitchers who are just grinding out games, going but five innings and 100 innings.
I think
innings,
you and I can both agree that it's better, like the game of baseball is better when there's multiple ways to be really good. And it's not just guys throwing 98 all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think that's the thing, right? Is that even on the Rays staff, you have, you know, elite level pitches like Aaron Civale's curve, which is like a double plus pitch. It's maybe the best curveball in all of baseball right now. And then you have Eflin, who has like exceptional command. You have Pepio and Taj Bradley and Shane Boz, who have like insanely good stuff. Littell is something different, right? His fastball, his shape, his pitches, none of them are like exceptional. Nothing is like this one like trick, you know, pitch. It's just really well put together, and he does just really interesting stuff, but it just attacks batters, right? They kind of talked about on the broadcast, but the Rays, you know, kind of philosophy, and it's a pitching philosophy that other groups have had, is the idea of the race to two strikes, right? Is if you get ahead of batters, if you can get to that two strikes, you're in the driver's seat. So hitting a baseball is hard. Don't make it easy on them. Attack the zone. And you either are putting yourself in a good pitcher's count to potentially get a K, but he's also just a guy that like he walked like one guy and then he immediately got a double play on Saturday. The walk was kind of notable. Like last year it was very, you know, small sample size, but a 2.5% walk rate, which was tied with George Kirby as like best in all of baseball. So that's the level of like, just attack the zone, make batters have to swing, and then get, you know, ground outs and pop outs and just let the defense play. And so his starts are fun because he gets the ball, he throws it quick. He doesn't walk people. He attacks the zone. If he's going to get beat, he gets beat. So be it. It's over quick. If he doesn't get beat, he's creating action, right? He's striking out people or he's getting ground balls and he's letting this extremely good defense behind him make plays. And I think he's like a perfect pitcher for this lineup too, because he's just consistently getting 5-6 innings of high quality starts. And I'm a true believer, but I'm more than just a believer. I just really enjoy like watching him pitch because it's such a brisk, you know, I feel like Rob Manfred would really love a Zach Littell start because he gets the ball, he moves it quick. Those games are moving along. Get some ground ups up and down, no waiting around, no full counts, no deep counts. Let's just keep going. And I love it. And Civale with one walk on Friday, I think is also, I definitely want to highlight that. Only one walk, amazing amount of command. He also was somebody that, you know, came in to this year, I think really working hard. He's very much a tinkerer as a pitcher. He likes to work on his stuff. He calls his own pitches. So he is somebody who is constantly working. And last year, his biggest knock was he was not available late in games because he was just falling behind. He was falling behind. He was nibbling. He was going full counts. He was walking people. He was at 100 pitches by like the fourth inning. And it was like, you can't be basically this kind of a weakness for the team. Is you need innings and you're good enough. And that's sort of the Rays pitching philosophy, is attack batters, because if you're going to get beat, you're going to get beat. But if you're not, you're going to go deep. And I think Savali worked on that, and he really did come in and pitch much better game, much more focused, attack-driven game, where he didn't let the batters kind of get back into the driver's seat after getting ahead of batters. He was able to kind of put them away or get them to just put the ball into play and then kind of work on. So that was really, really good.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Then there was Sunday. Sunday was, I don't think there's anything good to talk about in any of the pitching. I mean, that was the worst pitched game for the Rays, and hopefully the worst pitch game they'll play all season.
Hopefully. I mean, so this was the fourth game of the season, but it was the number five spot in the rotation. They chose to pitch Pepio today and put him on that schedule, and I'm sure there are a number of reasons for that. But it was Sean Armstrong to open, Tyler Alexander to pitch the bulk, and then they ended up using Jacob Wagaspak as well. So these three guys, and I guess you would probably include Chris Devensky in there to some extent, were to make up this swingman, bulk. You know, these are your multi-inning relievers, and Alexander slots into that fifth spot in the rotation after the injury to Taj Bradley. And again, I had to remind myself, how many people are hurt for this to be the pitching plan? Shea McClanahan, Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen, Taj Bradley, and Shane Boss. That's a whole rotation's worth of starting pitchers for the Rays to then get to. This is who our number five is. And that's just one game. Like,
just one game.
Yeah. I'm not trying to write any of those guys off. I hope they can be contributors throughout. There was like a lot of doom and gloom, but like, again, first off, like, look around the league, who's got a good number five starter. Now you don't want them to be like horrendous. You don't want them to be just walking the bases loaded and really taking you out of games. You want them to, you know, at the end of the day, like, you got to throw strikes at least, right? Your number five guy just can't be walking the bases loaded. If they hit a couple home runs and you lose, oh well, we move on. But yeah, not too confident in the group of Tyler Alexander and Jacob Wagaspak after watching them throw. Again, command was the biggest issue. The Rays walked a ton of batters this weekend. Ryan Pepio's got three walks through three innings already here in this game. On one hand, I opened the show saying the Rays are going to rely on pitchers with command. And on the other hand, they did not have great command throughout the weekend, and that's the reason why they didn't win the series.
Well, that's the thing, right? That's the number to me that I looked at as the big difference, right? So in the two losses, the Rays had 15 walks given up. In the two wins, they had 5 total walks given up. So there you go. That's all you need to see. That's it. That was it, right? It's you cannot be giving away free chances to any team, let alone teams as good as like the Blue Jays. They're going to take advantage. And because of the fact that the Blue Jays did not walk as many batters, and the Rays and the Blue Jays had the same level of quality of contact, the Jays were able to win in those two games where they got more free runners. right? So you just get one home run, boom, that's now multiple runs instead of just one. And multiple home run balls will win you games more than those solo shots. So those are, walking is the big issue, right? And in the first game with Eflin, I don't think, you know, you have Eflin and you had Garrett Clevinger had three walks in his two innings. Clevinger is coming back from an injury. He's also having to readjust to like the pitch clock, which wasn't a thing when he was previously injured. I'm less worried about him to kind of get back into it. Eflin, I'm not worried about at all. Kind of just, again, kind of lost a little bit. Alexander, again, we don't really know too much, right? He is a bit more of a wild card in when it comes to this. So, yeah, I Wagisbach as well. I mean, I think the other pitcher that I'm not, it's one game, so I'm not exactly, and it's a terrible matchup for somebody like Alexander to face, like almost all right lineup. I'm not throwing it all away yet, but I think the Alexander and Wagisbach are the two guys with like the most questions, and they left us with the worst impression. So I think they're already the guys that are at the bottom. They're already the two guys that have like options. So we already are looking at them as potential shuttle options eventually. But they're also the easiest to replace because the Rays have plenty of pitchers ready. So the second Taj Bradley gets healthy or Shane Baz is ready.
Or Jake Odorizzi.
Or Jake Odorizzi. Yeah, that's another one. Like a nice solid bet. Like that's your go. They just slot right in. The one pitcher though that I thought would be better that didn't, that does give me some concern. Again, it's two appearances, so it's not, we're not saying he's cooked, it's over. If you're doing that, I think that's way too early, but kind of put it on the concerned, maybe like yellow. We're not to red light yet, but we're up to the yellow warning, and that's Sean Armstrong, who is such a key piece of this pen, who was so good for the Rays, and he has not looked sharp at all, both with command, which he's very very good at, and also just in general, he just seemed very I don't know, just not sharp. Like the fastball didn't seem like have the same zip, the command wasn't there, he seemed very tentative in his pitches, and he got hit pretty good in both game one and in game four. And that's a concern. He was the opener in game four and he did not open very well. It was pretty rough. So I would say that's a concern going forward. You're looking at him as a guy that you are going to rely on. It's one I'm going to watch. I'm not pushing the panic button. I'm not even removing the glass on the panic button, but I'm kind of checking where the panic button is on Sean Armstrong.
Yeah, no, he was the one where, again, the expectations were a lot higher for him. He was someone who I thought, he was locked in to make the team and someone who I thought would pitch in a number of different roles, right? He opened, he can also pitch late in games. He can give you 2 to 3 innings. Like, he was going to be your Swiss Army knife in the bullpen. And if you don't have that, does someone else kind of fill in that role? Someone that's not on the team right now? I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you that that was a little bit concerning. Let's move over. We've talked a lot about the pitching. On the position player side of the lineup, I want to talk about some of the new guys because they brought a lot to the plate, no pun intended, this past weekend. Let's start with Jose Caballero because he was involved in some other things as well. But first off,
he gets under people's skin. I don't know how he was just his very nature. He's just yeah, like walking around somehow doing nothing wrong, just getting people under.
I love his energy. He plays really hard. He plays a really good shortstop from what I saw this weekend.
Looks like he can handle it.
Got under Hennessy Cabrera's skin that easily this weekend to the point where Hennessy Cabrera like shoved him in the face and was suspended 3 games for it, and rightfully so. This was not like a you know, a little shove to the chest, like you might see. This was like kind of violent and uncalled for. And so if Jose Caballero is doing that, and it's like the opening weekend, and he's pissing people off like that, I don't even know what he did, if anything. I cannot wait for when he's facing, you know, the Yankees. Unfortunately, they don't have Josh Donaldson anymore, or the Red Sox in some of these high-intensity games, because I'm excited to have him on the team, and I really liked what he brought this weekend.
Yeah, I think I think the thing for me with Caballero in particular is they needed somebody to step in and play really good shortstop. That's the first and foremost like bar that the Rays need to clear is you need to be able to glove it at short. Mm-hmm. Period. Right? Period. And he looked great. He made a bunch of really good plays out there. Looked really comfortable, really smooth in the field. At the plate, I think he has a pretty nice swing. He's fast. He's really, really fast. He dropped a couple of bunts. He had a bunt with was it bases loaded or first and third as not even a safety squeeze, but an attempt to basically cause some chaos, right? And then he did bunt that was thrown away by Cabrera that led to another run. And maybe that's what Cabrera's upset about. I don't know. He was weak of body, weak of mind. And Cabby did that to him. And so I loved great debut. Great, 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 great debut for Jose Caballero in those first four games. I think very, very strong at short. Like I'm very comfortable with him being the everyday shortstop, batting low in the lineup. He got a hit by pitch. He got people under his skin, had a couple good swings. I like it. Got some walks, took some pitch. Like that's the other thing too. Like he was overall, I think the most important thing I saw from this weekend was that bottom of the lineup, 7, 8, 9. Looked not like a black hole at all, but like a very functionally deep lineup, because that 7, 8, 9, that is exactly where you can really stretch and get some runs, because if they're getting on base, they're setting the table for guys like Yandy and Lau and Randy to go nuts. If you're not getting contributions from them, you're really relying heavily on the top of the lineup. When the Rays have been their best, it's not because they have a bunch of all-stars. It's not because they have like two amazing thumpers at 3 and 4 and then nobody else. It's because everybody down the lineup is like 100 WRC plus guy. Everybody is somebody that's able to, you know, get a walk, get a base hit, you know, maybe steal a base, and that's it. Like you're getting contributions from everybody. And that's what I saw. Even when Caballero was not getting on base or getting a hit, he was still causing the pitcher to work.
Yeah,
and that's so, so important. Well, not sexy, but very important.
That was the theme all weekend, and we'll jump ahead to talk about this guy, Ben Rortvedt, the Rays' new. I mean, I guess it's backup catcher. He started two of the four games, so maybe it will be more of a split time with Pinto thing.
It could be just back and forth. I mean, that's at least for a good portion of the season. Catching is such a brutal position that if you're always giving a day off after a full game of catching, that's probably pretty nice for both guys.
Yeah. And he worked that amazing, was it 12 pitch at bat that ended in a walk and picked up a couple hits on the beginning as well. Yeah.
Set up the grand slam. Yeah.
Looked really comfortable behind the plate. I was just impressed. And we mentioned that right before opening day, like we recorded right after he was acquired, and we both said that we just feel so much more comfortable now with him on the roster, with another catcher like that on the roster. And I think from what we saw this weekend, that kind of reaffirms those beliefs. But yeah, that 12 pitch at bat, you mentioned Caballero made pitchers work. That really did feel like a theme, and maybe a slight change in approach, at least for some guys, right? I think you don't want to change like Yandy Diaz's approach, and he makes pitchers work anyways. But the approach last year seemed to be like, we're attacking fastballs early. We're attacking our pitchers early. Maybe for some of the new guys who, again, a lot of the reasons these guys are here is because there are injuries or trades or legal issues in the Dominican Republic. these guys weren't in the plans 6 months ago for the Rays, but now they are here. And so maybe, you know, Mottola is kind of reworking the approach for some of the newer guys whose expectations and whose projections aren't as high as, you know, someone who like Wander Franco, who was really going to be a perennial MVP candidate for the next however many years.
So one stat that shout out I can't remember the user, but I saw it on Twitter, but I was looking at this because pitches per plate appearance very early on, right? We're not actually like, it's too early to actually matter, but it's still important. It's a good little sign. The top three teams at pitches per plate appearance are the Yankees, the Rays, and the Orioles. So AL East domination, right? The Rays are seeing about 4.12 pitches per plate appearance over those first four games. Really, really important. That is exactly what you need to kind of just, again, extend at bats, make pitchers work, don't give up those easy outs. The same things that that we love about watching Zach Littell pitch, where he'll get that like quick first strike and the next batter just like grounds it immediately. And it's like a two pitch, boom, he's out of the inning. That's exactly what you don't want to see from your own offense. You want to see deep counts. You want to see, even when you're making outs, making the pitcher work. And that gets you to bullpens earlier. That makes it harder. That leads to those mistakes. And I love the approach. The other thing, looking at the leaderboards, the Rays K percentage, again, first four games, so crazy small sample size, but they were their 20.7% K percentage, which is seventh best in baseball so far. Tops is Arizona at 14.2%, who got the Rockies for their first four games. Very lucky. So striking out less, making pitchers work, those are the things that good offenses do. And I think that's something that's really hope to see continue, right? Is again, making contact, kind of basically, we talked about like Isak Paredes being build the entire plane out of Isak Paredes, everybody that can just like pull fly balls. The other thing is build the whole lineup out of Isak Paredes or Yandy Diaz, in the sense that every at bat is hard work. Every at bat for the pitcher is frustrating because you're not going to just get first pitch pop up. You're going to have to like, either you're coming into the money zone and the pitch and the batter can like absolutely tee off, or they're going to keep spitting on balls out of the zone. They're going to keep spitting on balls out of the zone. They're going to foul off. They're going to work those tough at-bats. And that is exactly, we saw that with Ben Roethlisberger. That was an amazing at-bat. We saw that with Caballero all weekend. We saw it with Richie Palacios all weekend. Got a bunch of walks. Again, just did not have easy outs. And that's so, so important. And Richie had a couple of really fun plays in the field, which already endeared him to the fans. You know, he had a great diving catch. Only the second best diving catch by the Rays bullpen of the weekend, though, because the ball boy, that guy, what a diving catch.
He got a lot of love for that, too.
That was a hell of a play. That was a full extension. That's some Ozzie Smith level dive and throw. That's amazing. Yeah. And to the other side, also on the Jays side, they also, the other ball guy had a great play. Like, just absolute Rays just have the great defense all throughout, on and off the field, on the playing field and whatnot. So yeah, Palacios looked great. Ahmed Rosario, that was one of the more bigger names that the Rays brought in. What did you think of your first glimpse of Rosario in a nice Columbia blue?
he is going to play exactly the role the Rays need, given everything that happened towards the end of spring training with the injuries. He can be plugged into right field. He's playing shortstop tonight. He is going to be that super utility player. And I think there's reason to believe that last year's offensive output was more of a fluke, not to say that he's going to return to what he was in the more prime years of his career. But I think there's reason to believe that you can expect more out of Ahmed Rosario. And I think he's going to play well enough that there's going to be some really hard decisions when some of these guys start getting back. Like, what happens to Taylor Walls when he's ready to go? Is there room for Johnny DeLuca on this team if guys like Richie Palacios continue to contribute? It's going to make for some really tough decisions. And to get him at that price, a guy in his like early 30s that has played for so long in the big leagues, that feels like such a bargain. And I really liked what we saw out of him this week. And I was worried, like, when they're, you know, they made the signing and they're like, yeah, he could be a corner outfielder. And I'm like, can he? I don't know. But from what I saw this weekend, like, he made a play out there that I saw. Mm-hmm. He just looks, you know, comfortable, fine out there. He's not going to be a Gold Glove winner by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, that utility role where you can plug him in, he's hitting cleanup tonight as well. You can plug him into a number of different spots in the lineup. A number of different places in the field. And I think that is going to be huge for the Rays this season. One guy who I don't want to, you know, rag on him too much, but I don't know if he's long for the big league club, and that's Austin Shenton. And we know he was like the last addition, right? This guy, he had a really good season in the minors this year. Maybe there's still some development there. He probably should be in AAA Durham to start this season, but he's on the big league team, the Rays. They did give him one start, right? Well, he's starting today.
Starting tonight, yeah.
Did he start it all over the weekend? No, right? No,
pinch hit.
He pinch hit. So it's clear that, like, he is there to be the 26 man, to pinch hit, and probably not in big situations, but to come off the bench, maybe, you know, get Yandy off his feet late in games. That's his role right now. And that's great. You know, like, he's in the big leagues. And that's awesome. And he's getting a start tonight because the Rays are playing their fifth game in 5 days, where, like, most teams had a day off on Friday or a day off today. And the Rays are playing 7-7. They're playing like 13-14 to start the year. Just like crazy numbers. So he will get some opportunities, right, as long as he's here. You imagine every fifth or sixth day they'll slot him into the lineup to give somebody a day off.
Right.
But, yeah, I just don't – now seeing that he's not playing that much, I feel like the next player to be added back from injury will probably replace Shenton on this roster.
Yeah, we talked about this before coming in, right? It's like, you know, everybody – the Rays always say, like, you know, oh, we love this guy. They love every guy, right? they love all the guys, obviously. And when it comes to that guy, it's like, how much do you actually love him, right? Are you talking like, you know, we have seen some guys come up, young guys, and then like get a huge run and they're like, yeah, we believe in this guy. Yeah. And others, it's been more like this, which is he's up because we kind of need a left-handed bat. And, you know, he probably is the most deserving. They could have gone with they signed Dom Smith to a minor league deal. He's going to Durham. They could have signed him to like just come in, but like I think that's like a little bit more longer term depth guy. I think Shenton getting that first role, I think is actually quite nice. Like it's a good tip of the cap for him. He's making some money, which is good. That's every day up there. Doesn't matter if you're on the pine or in the field, you're making money.
The per diem is a lot better too. And you know,
the per diem is a lot better. Yeah. Eat good. Yeah. But it does sort of show, like we were saying, like there was two coins, right? He is either DH opening day over Harold. And they're like, this guy is a core piece, or he doesn't play much and gets like one pitch hit in game four and now is getting a start, but like it's more of like a, you know, Yandy gets a working day off.
And it wouldn't shock me like if they give him the start today and then before this road trip Maybe they make a move and they bring like a Nico Goodrum up, who is on the 40 man already. Dom Smith is not. So maybe Goodrum would replace Shenton going to Denver this weekend. Just a thought. I don't know. That's no inside information. I know his parents are in town. I think they just showed him on the broadcast to give him that big league start. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And he's earned it, right? Like, he has earned it. He hit incredibly well. He did everything you're supposed to do all the way through the minors. And it's really hard to get on this team, right? There are a lot of other teams around baseball where it's easy to carve yourself out a role, you know, compared to what the Rays do. I don't know. I hope he produces while he's here and then goes back to Durham and continues to rake. And at some point, maybe they keep him around. Who knows?
I think he might. You could see him have a run. I could also see him having a run until Aranda gets back. And it's very possible that if you don't bring up Goodrum, you know, you're just like, okay, he is, you know, Aranda's maybe a couple weeks out, the finger's healing better than they thought, and they're just like, all right, Shenton can be here, but being that very last person on the lineup.
Yeah, and depending on, like, I don't know the severity of Aranda's injury other than that it's a broken finger. But yeah, if it's healing, Aranda is going to be a DH. Like, will he play the field occasionally? Yeah. But maybe if it's on, you know, if he can grip the bat and swing it, he could be up sooner rather than later back from the IL. That's kind of the role he's in a much reduced role. So just kind of makes up the numbers. But let's take a look forward. They're playing the Rangers now, the first of three games against the defending world champs, the team who knocked the Rays out in the AL wild card round last year. Currently down 3-0 in game one. We'll see Zach Eflin tomorrow and Aaron Civale on Wednesday. Then the team will get their first day off on Thursday as they head to Colorado for a three-game set at Coors Field against the Rockies. And we should see Littell in game one, the bullpen, you know, Alexander Day in game two, and Pepio in game three, unless they decide to skip that spot and go it would be Pepio Saturday and Eflin on Sunday. I don't think they'll do that. I think they're going to really want to maybe space these guys out a little bit more, especially since they go on another stretch without an off day. So I imagine we'll see some sort of bullpen day or mixture of Alexander and Wagus pack on Saturday. And that game's at Coors. Weird stuff is going to happen anyways. But let's start with the rest of this series against Texas. They're still very much in the game. Dane Dunning has lit on a few base runners, but hasn't gotten to enough trouble for the Rays to score. Tomorrow, though, what are you looking for out of Zach Eflin, who will be, you know, bouncing back after the last start did not end very well, and this time against a much tougher lineup?
I mean, I'd say it is a tougher lineup, but, like, that's also the Jays are pretty darn tough. Like, when it comes to Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero, I'd say they are as good as anything the Rangers have. So I think when it comes to the best is, like, there's no, it's just deeper with Texas. But, yeah, I think for Eflin, it's just, you know, kind of, again, it's flushing that last inning that he pitched and just coming back, getting ready to, like, really give it, you know, kind of be that ace guy, right? He's getting a chance. He also had a pretty rough game against Texas the last time he faced him. It wasn't his best. He wasn't terrible, but it was not his best work. And I think he's probably going to be pretty excited to have a chance at bouncing back against him. I think the biggest thing for him is just what worked so well in that first game. He was mixing pitches perfectly. He was mixing eye levels perfectly. He was doubling up high sliders with high fastballs. He had great command of every pitch. His sequencing in particular was so good. And if he can do that, it's very hard, even for the best lineups, to be able to like sustain that offense. Now, the key there is get those sequences, don't be too fine, and do not give up those free bags. That's going to be the biggest key, right? Is the more you walk, the worse it is on you, especially somebody like Eflin, who is a command guy. So I think keep sequencing. Don't worry about a solo home run, because it's going to be hard to get beat by just solo home runs. So just keep the Rangers, make them out hit you rather than let them have a chance to jump on a multi-run homer.
The Rays will see Andrew Heaney in that game on Tuesday, and then Nate Eovaldi on Wednesday facing off against Aaron Civale. At this point, if they just got one game in this series, that being tomorrow's game, I'd be pretty happy. Although they're still in it tonight, so maybe they can pull it off tonight. Then they will head to Colorado. Zach Littell, any worries about the way he pitches and the way that ballpark plays?
Well, oddly enough, I think it also kind of works, because grounders and obviously fly balls in that park can sail. It's a huge outfield, but the Rays have incredible range in that outfield. Jose Siri can chase down a lot of balls. So I like the idea of letting this very spacious park play to your advantage, right? Mm-hmm. There's a couple guys you definitely do not want to serve it up to, but if you can just keep it like in the park, which is a pretty massive one, right? Siri can probably chase it down. The most dangerous thing with Colorado is not so much like the homers, is oftentimes the doubles and the triples, because it's so massive out there in the corners that you need really athletic outfielders. So I don't think we're going to see Harold Ramirez in the outfield in this series against Colorado. I think we're going to be mostly seeing Siri, Randy, and then either Palacios, maybe Rosario, but maybe not. Maybe they'll just keep Palacios in there because he want the better range. But yeah, I think Littell, his contact heavy approach, I think still works, because one of his best pitches is that split, and that is a really good pitch for Coors. But like you said, it's funky. I think I'm more concerned about the Alexander game.
Yeah, but I mean, the Rockies, it's Ryan Feltner lined up to pitch that game for the Rockies. And
I mean, the Rockies are a mess.
Yeah, so, I watched a little bit of their game today because it was one of the only ones on this afternoon, and they look like a truly terrible baseball team in their pitching staff.
Was the Christopher Morel base hit to left field that turned into a Little League inside the park home run?
Yeah.
That part of the
– Yeah, the it was. The
yeah, that was rough.
And so, like, am I a little bit worried about the runs the Rays are going to give up? Yeah. They should score a ton of runs this weekend.
This is a good test for the offense to carry some wins, right? Is to really pick up the pitching. Is keep putting in those good at bats that you did against Toronto, and you should be able to find a lot of green territory.
So, like, Ryan Feltner made 10 starts for the Rockies last year. He had a 13.9% walk rate. Walks a ton of batters. A 5.82 ERA, xFIP has to be – is that part controlled?
It is.
A 5.30 xFIP in Coors. So even they did not think he was unlucky a season ago. So, yeah, like, am I a little worried about – pitching and how, you know, giving up some runs this weekend? Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to not walk batters, right? Like, that's the biggest thing, is because while you're there, and even if you're going to give up runs, and even if your ERA isn't going to look pretty when you leave Denver this weekend, you're in another long stretch of games. Let's throw strikes and stay in the game as long as possible. That's just going to make everything else run a lot smoother. So Alexander, Wagisback, like, Kyle Snyder, those meetings they have this week about how to attack that Rockies lineup, which is not strong, should just be throw strikes, throw strikes. If they hit it out.
Maybe walk Nolan Jones. If you want to walk somebody, you can walk Nolan Jones. Everybody else, make them beat you. And if they do, you just tip your cap. Mm-hmm. And if you have an option, probably prepare to see you in Durham. If you don't have an option, just, you know, tip your cap and know that you're going to get another shot.
No defense can save a walk. The best defense in the world cannot save a walk.
That's the key. That is the key, especially a team like Colorado, who is not good. The thing that they're going to want is free runners, and then to be able to maybe get like a cheap 2-3 run home run and put them up early, and mm-hmm. then have the Rays bats suddenly start chasing and get out of their comfort. Like that's the key to a Rockies win. So a solo home run, nobody's panicking, right? You go, okay, whatever. The Rays can do that too. When it starts to get bigger innings, then suddenly you can see that maybe psychology take hold a little bit. You know, they're going to have their chances. Like you said, I think the Rays offense should have their chances to feast this week. Just have to do it. And if the pitchers can just, you know, again, keep it in the yard, should be okay.
Should be. Any final thoughts on the week ahead and kind of what you're expecting? Anything you're looking for in particular?
I think, again, early season like this, it's put together good full games, right? The results don't matter as much as just putting in, you know, like, did you get beat because you were pitching well, but better hitters just beat you? Okay, whatever. Overall, pitch well, and long-term, things are going to go well. Keep putting in those good at-bats. You're not scoring today, even though you're getting on base or you're hitting hard. Keep doing that. You'll eventually get there. Like, I think what I want to see is closer games, obviously. Like, the two losses were really disappointing because they felt like they were out of them early. But the play was good enough that they really, really could have done a lot more. I just think keep playing like that. Win against the Rockies and hold your own against the Rangers. And that's, again, the recipe for that early season is just don't fall into a bad pattern early where you're kind of losing a bunch of games and like you can kind of get a little bit off mentally. I think the Rays, again, are like one of the better teams when it comes to that, like kind of holistic mental and playing style, like combined, not getting too far down. I think that's the big key, is just to like keep playing good baseball and let the results follow.
Yeah. A few other notes I had from this week, and I think the new turf for the Trop looked really good.
Looked good, played really well. Like, yeah. I thought it played a bit less, like there wasn't as much wacky, like spin or crazy super ball bounces that you saw in years past.
Yeah, and that was something that the Rays, you know, they talked a lot about, the crushed up walnuts and the warning track. Apparently, I didn't know this. The warning track was not like a good warning track at Tropicana Field. There was no difference in the surface from the outfield to the warning track. So now outfielders can actually feel when you're getting closer to the wall. Well, that feels like something that should have happened a long time ago, but better late than never. I know Stu was talking a lot about the upgrades to the field, which he always does. And I've always given him, him and you know, the rest of the team credit for the amount of money and effort that they put into Tropicana Field, a building that they're actively trying to leave. You know, now they're staying in the same vicinity, but they put a lot of money into it. And from what my parents went to a couple of games, they said, you know, the ballpark looks nice. There's always some new food options and a few different fun things. So looks like there was positive on the, you know, non-baseball operation side of things for the Rays, and I like that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we're missing about this weekend. The Yankees look really good. If we want to jump around the league real quick, Yankees did really well against the Astros.
Yeah, that's like probably the big early. I mean, the Yankees look great. The Dodgers look very formidable. So no surprises there. That's the only two that I think like really like jump out is like, and even then it's, I don't know if those jump out. It's like they you know, did well. The Astros, I think the opposite, right? So the Yankees swept the Astros in Houston, which is big. And in each game, the Yankees came back against that Houston bullpen, which is important. Like they were beating Josh Hader and Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu. Like they were beating the Astros when they have a lead should not be losing games, and you definitely shouldn't be losing four. That's a big win for the Yankees, right? That's awesome for them. It does kind of cover over a couple of issues that they had in there, like Nestor Cortez and Carlos Rodon. They had some shaky moments, hung in there, and then the Astros bullpen's kind of collapsed. Juan Soto looks very good. Shocker. He's a very good baseball player. Around the league, Baltimore, I mean, looked good, but like they were playing there. It's tough to evaluate early. Pittsburgh, they're undefeated. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One other piece of news that I think we probably need to touch on before we end it. And that's Junior Caminero goes down injured over the weekend for the Bulls. Did hit a home run. They're calling it a quad injury. I believe he underwent an MRI today in Durham. And that's really all we know. A quad injury is never good. The fact that he had to be helped off the field means that it was probably a little more than some tightness. There was some sort of injury there to happen to the muscle. So hopefully he's not out for too long. But I have to imagine I won't be seeing him tomorrow in the starting lineup for the Bulls for their home opener. You just have to hope he doesn't miss too much time.
Yeah, obviously super scary. I mean, he's definitely one of the top prospects in all of baseball. Like basically right now in the minors still, it's pretty much him and Jackson Holliday is like the two.
Yeah. And they played this weekend.
And both looked very good until Caminero went down. That would be a big loss, obviously, for both Durham and eventually for the Rays. So you just hope that it's nothing too major and he'll be able to kind of get back up to speed and be ready for that call up early in the season, which I feel like he's definitely somebody that I think we are going to see sooner rather than later this year if health cooperates.
Right. And it sucks. Like this time in Durham, he skipped AAA last year, and we know the bat is big league ready. But in terms of development, a lot of little things that you can't get at AA or you're going to get at AAA because you're facing a lot of guys that are either running the doorsteps of the big leagues or have already pitched in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Like that is a different caliber of pitching. So as much as, you know, we think his bat is big league ready, I think this is valuable time for him to develop so that he can get into the big leagues and start contributing for the Rays. But that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. If you're watching on YouTube and you haven't already, make sure to hit that like button, subscribe, and turn on those notifications so you can join us whenever we go live. If you want to say thank you and maybe be in on some exclusive content that will be coming down the line, you can head on over to patreon.com/raiseyourvoice where you can become a member for as little as $1 a month. Also, as always, there's been a bunch of great new content at draisedbay.com, so make sure to head on over there as well. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you next week.